This is Life Rattle. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight on Life Rattle number 1168, we present the first of a multi-show series of outstanding writing, Life Rattle Classics, written by Natalia Segal. Natalia Segal was born in Moscow in 1974. In 1982, Segal came, with her mother, to Winnipeg, where her father had settled 5 years earlier. The family moved to Toronto in 1983. Segal left the family home soon after and moved around the country during the next 10 years, living in BC, Nova Scotia, Alberta, as well as Ontario. She lived on the streets, in rooming houses, deep in the woods on mountains, and on the sand in hidden beaches, and in abandoned buildings, squats. Sometimes she held down an apartment for a few months, but mostly she wandered. Among other places, Segal lived in a small trailer on Cape Breton Island. She panhandled, begged, and read fortunes, tarot cards, and palms for a living. She ate at Salvation Army's or any other soup kitchen or food van she found. She hitchhiked up and down Canada and entertained tired truckers with her stories. She babysat children in winter in exchange for a spot to sleep on their parents' floor. She trained dogs, chalked on cement, and painted faces on rocks and glued pennies together. Segal eventually got off the street, slowed down, met her soon-to-be wife, Sandra, and recently completed her MFA in creative writing. Now Segal lives and writes in Toronto with Sandra and their two daughters, Alma and Zara. Natalia Segal has written a collection of stories about her life on the streets, sparse, hard-hitting prose that doesn't compromise or apologize for itself. Let's listen now to Smiley, tonight's first story, written and read by Natalia Segal, which will be immediately followed by Little Sue and the brown and blue flower print curtain. Don't be misled by the benign story titles. These stories are not for the young or the faint-hearted. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Smiley. Smiley, I wrinkle my nose. What's a smiley? Scrappy and I stand at the corner of Young and College. The chilled October evening wind blows through Scrappy's thick black hair. Smiley's like when you're beating the fuck out of someone and shit, Scrappy says. And you tell them to lean on the ground on their hands and knees and open their mouth and bite down on the curb there between the sidewalk and the road. Then you kick them down on the back of their head, stomp, and smash their teeth and mouth in. And when you pull them up by the hair, their mouth is all open and full of blood and broken teeth and shit. It looks like they got on this big old funny clown smile on. Why would anyone actually agree to bite the curb like that, even if their face is being beaten in as shit? Well, they don't always agree, and when they don't, just make 'em. You force 'em. You beat 'em so hard that they pass out. You make sure they pass out near the curb. And then you open their mouth and put it on the curb for them and smash their heads in anyway. Twice as hard. Twice as hard? Yeah. So next time the stupid motherfuckers will listen to you the first time. Scrappy smiles and brushes her thick black hair off her shoulders.
Little Sue and the Brown and Blue Flower Print Curtain. November 16th, 1989, 2:30 in the afternoon, Queen Street. I celebrate my 15th birthday in country-style donuts, over Sweet Dreams herbal tea with 3 packets of brown sugar and 2 dollops of milk. Little Sue and I sip our tea and talk about Psycho, Little Sue's boyfriend. I don't know, Tashi, Little Sue says. When I first met him, I thought he was so ugly, all short with crooked yellow teeth and that big pot belly, and the way he just came up and bit me on the shoulder really hard. Little Sue cringes and scrunches her nose. Now I think he's so beautiful. He looks just like a lion to me. Like a lion with ice blue eyes. I just wish he wouldn't get so angry all the time. Little Sue and I carry our empty white cups to the wood and glass counter, thank Mom, the waitress, for our tea, snuggle in our sweaters, scarves, hats, mitts, and leather jackets, hobble to the glass and metal doors, pull the doors open, and walk, face first, into the snow and wind. We stroll down Queen Street, cross Bay Street, and duck into the Eaton Center. Little Sue and I shuffle through Zeller's. Little Sue slinks through the cosmetics aisle. She grabs a red lipstick off a shelf and smothers it on her full, pale lips. I spray my underarms with Exclaim perfume. We powder our faces, peer into a round counter mirror, look at each other, giggle, and jet downstairs to the houseware section. Little Sue picks out flannel flower print bed sheets. I argue for solid colored cottons. We agree on a blue down duvet. We peruse the kitchen aisles, finger the electric appliances, we definitely need a Cuisinart food processor, and caress the Corningware dish sets and Teflon pots and pans. Beside the housewares aisles, in the windows and lighting section, Little Sue and I choose lamps for the study and curtains for the bedroom. The orange curtains match the cotton blue flower print bed sheets and midnight blue flannel duvet we agreed on. It's 5 o'clock, Sue says, and steals a quick, lustful look at the bathroom aisle. Better get back before Psycho. He'll be pissed if he gets home and there's no smokes. Shit. We still need to pan up enough to get another pack, I say. Don't worry about it today, Tashi. It's your birthday. Little Sue smiles. I stashed some cash away last night and didn't tell Psycho about it. Smoke's on me today, lady. Little Sue throws her arms around me and squeezes my neck. Almost legal, she chuckles. We reach the escalator, grip the handrails, hop on top of the handrails, and glide to the main floor. Little Sue reapplies her makeup and scoots out the door. We meander up Young Street to college and observe the different shoes pedestrians wear and ponder what significance shoes have on personality. Little Sue and I think worn-out boots means worn-out minds, and any shoe over 5 years old indicates insanity. Little Sue and I huddle together and smoke Player's Light cigarettes and blow the smoke inside our mitten holes and wait for the college streetcar. Our 501 streetcar arrives. Little Sue and I scuttle to the back doors and squeeze between the people getting off. Little Sue jumps in and holds the door open for me. We rush to the back seats and search the floor for transfers. At High Park Road, we pull the bell, push the doors open, and hop to the concrete. We cut through High Park and turn onto Algonquin Avenue. Arm in arm, Little Sue and I stroll down Algonquin Avenue. We examine the large old poplar trees that frame the square dilapidated houses and discuss our last seance. I'm not going to be famous, Little Sue tells me, but I will become infamous somehow. I nod, cough, and listen. That red-headed spirit whose name we are never to say or even think, Little Sue says. Her and I will have a fierce battle when I'm about 40. A battle to the death. I wonder what I'm going to be, I say. Little Sue unhooks her arm from mine, steps away from me, eyes me up and down, and nods her head once. You're going to be famous, she says. I want to be infamous, I say. Little Sue shrugs her shoulders. I want to be famous. We reach the door. Little Sue rummages inside her jacket pockets and pulls out one small key. The key dangles by a chain from a stuffed bunny with pink fuzzy ears. Little Sue makes the bunny dance and sing happy birthday to the door. The dark and slippery stairwell smells like deep-fried potatoes and stale urine. Little Sue and I slither and stumble up the stairs. We creep to our door. Little Sue leans her ear on the keyhole. We hold our breath. It's quiet. He's not home yet, Little Sue whispers. We rush in the door and stuff our jackets in a red plastic milk crate. The milk crate and a ripped khaki green army duffel bag sit on the floor in the closet. The closet looms at the foot of the stained mattress stacked atop a decrepit box spring. Little Sue and Psycho's bed. Beside Little Sue and Psycho's bed, an orange couch leans on three legs and struggles with the weight of its bloated, mismatched cushions. This orange couch is my bed. Little Sue and I hop on the couch, cross our legs, bounce on a squeaky spring, and lean into the armrests. Little Sue lights a cigarette. We share it. I hope he's not out getting drunk and stoned, Little Sue says. I hope he is. Maybe he won't come home tonight and I can get to sleep in peace without having to listen to you guys fuck half the night. Last night was great, Little Sue says. I give it a 9.5, I answer. We giggle, lean our backs into the couch, and rest our feet on Little Sue's bed. I hate living in such a cramped space, Little Sue says. I wish we had a window, I say. We can pretend we have a window. Let's get the fabric we found in the garbage yesterday and hang it on the wall behind your bed like a curtain. Little Sue scampers over the bed, leans off the edge, and reaches into the closet. I jump on her bed, bounce up and down, and wait. Little Sue tosses the brown and blue flower print fabric with yellow ochre stains and frayed gray crusty edges at me. We push paper clips through fabric corners. I take off my boot and use the steel toe to nail two thumbtacks in the wall. We hang our curtain. Good job, Little Sue says. We slap each other's hands and fall into the couch. We cross our legs. Little Sue lights a smoke, takes a puff, and passes the cigarette over. You think you'll marry Psycho? I ask. I don't know. Sometimes I think it would be pretty cool. We're trying to have a baby, but it's not working. If not Psycho, then who? Little Sue looks at the curtain. He'll be tall and muscular and blonde with jade green eyes. He'll be rich, too. He'll have a car and a great job and a really slick name like Richard or Jordan or Milton. Milton, I snicker. Okay, maybe not Milton, Little Sue shrugs. He'll buy me a gorgeous red wedding dress, and he'll cook supper every night and set the table with our best china and light white candles and serve everything in silver serving dishes, and we'll have dinner parties once a month, and he'll always tell me how great I look and give me money every day to buy makeup and new clothes. What's yours going to be like? I twist a string off the couch and finger a hole in the cushion. I need to put a new sheet on this. The stuffing makes me itch at night, I say. Little Sue pushes me over. Okay, okay. I grab her arm and pull myself up. He'll have lots of tattoos, I say. What kind of tattoos? Little Sue asks. I don't know. Dragons and horses and secret symbols and stuff. Lots of color? No, only black work. What else will he look like? He'll be Chinese or native, dark-skinned. He'll be a really amazing martial artist, and really, really smart and clean and moral, and he'll be absolutely crazy about me. He'll just walk into town one day after sunset, and no one will know where he came from. Ooh, a tall, dark, handsome, and mysterious man for Tashi. Little Sue pokes a finger in my ribs and hands me half a smoke. The door swings open. Little Sue jumps on the bed. I stretch my legs across the couch, lean my head on the armrest, and reach between the cushion for my book. Psycho staggers through the door, swaggers towards Sue, and falls onto the floor. One of you stupid wenches better have a smoke for me, Psycho pulls himself onto the bed. Little Sue stuffs a cigarette in Psycho's mouth and lights it. What the fuck's that rag doing on the wall? Psycho screams and kicks off his 6-year-old shoes. We needed something to cover the window, I say.
That was Natalia Segal reading her stories Smiley and Little Sue and the Brown and Blue Flower Print Curtain. Now let's listen to tonight's third and fourth stories. Under the Evergreen Roof, followed immediately by Where Are You, Daniel Ross? Both written and read by Natalia Segal. Note, these stories are not for the young or the faint of heart. Listener's discretion is strongly advised.
Under the Evergreen Roof. At Young in College, Fox sings and plays guitar under the Evergreen Roof. It must be about 3 o'clock in the morning. When Fox runs out of songs to sing, he asks us for requests. Play American Pie, I say. Fox flips his long brown hair off his thin freckled face, strums his guitar, and sings. A long, long time ago. Alley Cat, Rat Man, Shorty, Care Bear, Dice, Patty, Squirrel, and I join in. I can still remember. Alley Cat sits on the ground. How that music used to make me smile. And leans against the wall. She pinches her large, watery stomach with her thin pink hands and bounces her small blonde head to the music. Last night I had a miscarriage, Alley Cat tells me. She looks up at Fox and yells, Sing, I believe the children are our future! Fox swirls his guitar behind his back, dances a strange little dance, and opens his palms in front of him. Fox smiles a comical, feminine smile, represses a giggle, and sings, a cappella. Dice, Patty, Ratman, and Squirrel also sing. They sing in high-pitched voices, with hands clutched to their chests. They sound like a Mickey Mouse chorus. I believe the children are our future. Keep them safe and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. I was partying with these guys, and I told them not to pick me up and roughhandle me the way they did. I told them I was pregnant. Alley Cat draws a circle with her middle finger in the dust on the pavement floor. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter. But they picked me up and threw me over their shoulders anyway. They were drunk. And when I woke up in the one guy's bed in the morning, there was all this blood all over his white sheets. I'm glad I messed up his fucking white sheets. Alley Cat smiles a faraway smile. But the baby is gone. Remind us how we used to be. It was Ratman's baby, Alley Cat says. He's really upset about it, too. She glances across the pavement at Ratman. Ratman drops his hands to his sides, winks one eye at Alley Cat, wipes his forehead with the back of his left hand, and continues the song. I decided long ago never to live in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I lived as I believe. Half pint. Will you tell me how old you are? Alley Cat asks. No, not unless you want me to lie, I answer. I'll tell you how old I am, but only if you tell me too, Alley Cat says. I'm 17, I lie. I'm 14, Alley Cat says. Alley Cat is 1 year younger than I am. No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity. This is my all-time favorite song, Alley Cat says and smiles and joins in. Because the greatest, I sing along too. Love of all is happening to me. I lay an arm over Alley Cat. Alley Cat lays an arm over me. Ratman strolls into our corner and settles on the ground beside Alley Cat. He nuzzles into Alley Cat's side and leans his long, thin chin on her small, round shoulder. Patty slow dances with Shorty. Care Bear hugs Dice. Fox's voice vibrates between Young Street skyscrapers, rises above the malnourished trees, and cloaks the empty streets in music.
Where are you, Daniel Ross? I lie in bed and stare at my stucco ceiling. My brown alarm clock radio flashes 8:45 a.m. in my ear. My small 12th floor, two-bedroom student family housing unit hums with Young Street sounds outside the plant frame window. I drape over the edge of my bed, search the floor for my glasses, find them, don them, scramble around under the bed for the big yellow phone book, open it to the private investigator section, pick up the phone, and dial. Hi, do you locate missing persons? I ask. Yes, he says. I have a missing person that I would like to locate. No problem. All we need is the first and last name, Daniel Ross, I say. We also need his date of birth, social security number, driver's license, and most recently known address. If I had all those things, I wouldn't need your help in locating this person. Ma'am, without this information, you are looking for a needle in a haystack, he tells me, and pauses. Well, what do you know about him, then? His name is Daniel Ross. He has serious chronic arthritis. He was a pool shark in BC 12 years ago. He lived in Toronto before that. I don't remember the address. Some sunny-sounding street. I take a breath, twist my hair between my fingers, and continue. He was into martial arts and had tattoos all over his body. You need more than that, ma'am. Where and how did you meet him, for example? We met in the middle of Young Street. I kicked him in the head. You kicked him in the head? Yes. And now, 12 years after you kick him in the head on Young Street, you want to find him with only his first and last name, he says with a chuckle. Yes, I sigh. We were supposed to meet again. Great, he says. Now we're getting somewhere. Did the two of you have a spot in mind? And he never made it, or you never made it? Where was it? No, it's not like that, I say. We were just supposed to meet again because it was supposed to be a small world. I see, ma'am. A small world. So what should I do? Can you help me? No. No, I cannot help you, ma'am, he answers and chuckles again. I think you need more help than I can get you. Don't bother phoning other PIs, because anyone who says that they can help you is lying. Take my word for it. Thanks, I say, and put the phone down. I stretch my arms out to my sides, roll out of bed, stuff my feet into fuzzy blue slippers, and shuffle to the closet. I open the closet door, reach in and pull on a cord that dangles from the ceiling. The bare light bulb flickers and shines on the concrete white walls. I walk into the closet and settle on a chair in front of my computer. I bend down and squeeze between my small pine chair and cedar desk. I push the round button on the hard drive with my right index finger, squirm out, and lean into my thin brown chair. The screen flickers on. I click, scrape, bleep, hum, and buzz onto the internet. Connect to Canada 411 and look up every listed Ross across the country. I cut and paste the numbers into Microsoft Word and organize them according to their likeness. First, all the Daniel Rosses. Next, all the Danny Rosses. Then the Dan Rosses to the D Rosses and the plain, no first initial Rosses. I divide the list into provinces. I sign off the net. I pick up the phone. Young lady, scrapes an aged voice across a crackled line. I am 86 years old, and I have never had any tattoos anywhere on my body. I hear a loud and shrill voice scream in the background. I know you were cheating on me, you dirty old bastard. I hear the jingle and crackle of glass against floor. Who is that other woman on the phone? Who is she? Tell me. The voice behind the tattooless old man hollers. I apologize and hang up. I take a deep breath, scratch behind my ear, fix my glasses, and dial again. I speak to a lady in Toronto whose husband, Daniel Ross, died 3 years ago. Veronica kept his name in the phone book because she misses him greatly. Daniel smoked cigarettes all his life and died of lung cancer. Shortly after his death, their dog, Sparky, died of cancer too. Veronica tells me she's glad I knew her husband, who died at the age of 83. We have a nice chat about how wonderful he was. I lay down the phone, stretch my legs, crack my knuckles, twist my back, roll my neck side to side, and call again. A sharp, low voice at the end of the line belongs to Donna. Her son, Daniel Ross, is 17 years old and has refused to return her calls for 3 months. You better tell me right now where my son is, Donna says. I'm his mother. I have a right to know. I don't know where your son is, ma'am, I say. I have never met your son. The man I'm looking for is in his early 40s. I apologize for any inconvenience I might have caused and hang up. Donna calls me back. I threaten to call the police. Bitch, Donna growls, and slams the phone 3 times before I hear the dial tone. I walk to the kitchen, turn on the stove, and boil water for tea. The phone rings. I pick up the receiver, squint into the call display window, D. Ross. I let it ring through to the answering machine. I don't know who the fuck you are, a gruff man's voice growls in my ear. But my fucking wife just left because some crazy bitch called and asked for me. I pick up my pen and strike his number off my list. At 12:30, I sip my tea and dial a friend in Vancouver. Lee, I say. This half pint? Lee answers. Yeah, it's me. Been a long time. Good to hear you. Listen, I say. I need a favor. What? I need you to go around to all the pool halls that were around 12 years ago and ask if anyone remembers a guy named Daniel Ross. You're joking, right? Lee snorts. 12 years ago? I'm serious, I say. It could be fun. You can take your friends and play pool with a bunch of old guys and shoot darts and drink Sleemans and stuff. You think those old guys will appreciate a bunch of F2M dykes sporting sideburns and packing rubber cocks, waltzing into their pool halls and asking suspicious and, might I add, ridiculous questions about some guy from 12 years ago? So you gonna do it or what? I ask. Lee takes a deep breath and exhales in my ear. What the hell? Sounds like fun. What's his name again? His name is Daniel Ross. He's half native, half Chinese. He is covered in tattoos, the most prevalent of which is a huge yin-yang symbol inside one of his palms. He was a pool shark in BC 12 years ago. He has chronic arthritis and sports a cane. Got it, Lee says. Daniel Ross, cross, yin-yang on his hand. Pool shark with a cane. Great, I say. I'll talk to you next week so you can tell me all about your adventures in Vancouver's pool halls. I hang up. I shuffle to the balcony and light a cigarette. My stomach grumbles. I glance at my watch. 1:00. I butt the cigarette into a rusted soup can and head to the kitchen. I open the fridge. Stare at the contents, scratch my head, and shut the door. I stroll into the closet, squeeze inside the chair, and glare at my Stars in Space screensaver. I connect to the net. I sign into my Hotmail account and log on MSN directory. I look up every D, Dan, Daniel, and Danny Ross on the net. There are hundreds. I email them all. Hi, I'm looking for a lost friend. Do you have a yin-yang tattoo on your palm? Are you in your late 30s to early 40s? Did you once travel to Banff with a gal named Bunny? If so, you are the guy I'm trying to find. At 3:00, I email every black belt registry in Canada and America. I'm looking for a black belt from 12 years ago. His name is Daniel Ross. He is of Asian and Native heritage. He has a yin-yang tattoo on his palm. Do you know him, or know of anyone who might? At 4:30, I email the Arthritis Foundation. I'm looking for an old friend. He has serious chronic arthritis. He is of Asian and Native descent, approximately 40 years old and covered in tattoos. Can you help me? At 6:00, little Sue knocks on my door. I've been trying to call you all day. What the hell have you been doing? She asks. I thought maybe you got lost in your schoolwork or something. You remember Daniel? I ask. You mean that guy that just showed up out of nowhere one day with all those tattoos? Yeah, him. You remember? You and Psycho were dating back then. Little Sue's cheeks blaze a ripe cherry hue. Psycho was so gross. I can't believe I ever even let him look at me. Little Sue mocks a gag. I laugh. Daniel, huh? You haven't mentioned him in 15 years. 12, actually. What about him? Little Sue asks. I've been looking for him all day. Any luck? No. Little Sue smiles at me and shakes her blue dreads side to side. Tashi, you're so crazy sometimes, she laughs. Why are you trying to find him now? I shrug my shoulders, shake my head, and watch Sue pull a smoke out of her hair. I don't know, I answer.
That was Natalia Segal reading her stories, Under the Evergreen Roof, and Where Are You, Daniel Ross. That concludes Life Rattle 1168. Arnie Achtman recorded Natalia Segal reading her stories. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle returns next Sunday night at 9 o'clock with more stories by Natalia Segal. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Thank you.